Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. This is episode number 13, Monster Truck Outlaws of the West. And man, we're back and we're ready to go. And sadly, MJ can't be here tonight with me, but I have a special guest co-host tonight. That's Levi Jones. Levi, how are you doing tonight?
Hi, guys. How you doing? I'm doing pretty good tonight.
Awesome. Well, you know, let's talk a little bit about our guests. I mean, personally, I'm a big fan of him. Grew up watching him on Monster Jam Speed. This guy's been one of my fan favorites as a kid. Levi, what do you got to say about him?
Well, if I had one word to describe our very awesome guest, is that he is a king in his own right.
You know, Phil, I know what Phil would say if he had one word, and that'd be crunch, because he put it in all the descriptions. But, you know, without further ado, let's introduce David Smith. David, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Thanks for having me.
No problem. You know, without further ado, let's get started. And, you know, first question I'm going to go to, I asked this to all my guests. You know, how did you get your start in motorsports? Not a lot of people know. Some people know, some people don't know.
Years and years ago, I used to love drag racing. Had a couple of strip cars that we would run. And then I got to started doing air conditioning work with my uncle, and ran across Scott. He needed a job done at the shop, and we were the company that did it. And then just started hanging out, really, back probably in 96 or so. Started hanging out, and one thing led to another, and I started crewing with him. I think it was 97 when I actually started with him. And Everything started right there.
So what led to you eventually getting the King Crunch truck in name?
Well, Nils Wickander actually owned it all. And after, you know, Scott had sold everything to him. And then I guess really Nils just kind of got tired of it and asked if I wanted it. And we came to a deal and everything, you know, I took the names over, or the name at that point. We only had one truck. Took the name and everything over. I think it was about 2001, something like that, is whenever I took everything over.
Sorry about that. You know, you started driving, taking the name over in 2001. And you just kind of grew from there, really, with, you know, 2002 and above, 2004, you obviously made your first world finals. Talk about that experience a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the first world finals was, I think that was 04, if I can remember. Just ecstatic to run it, you know. I mean, everybody, that's the goal everybody had, is trying to get to that point. And to be able to get there as quick as we did, I mean, we're only talking about the third season for me. And to be able to get there, and then consistently stayed there until I think it was 2010 or 11 was the last year that I actually competed there. But that track was a thrill. I wish they would have never moved it. Las Vegas was kind of where everybody wanted to be. You know, it's what you wanted in your career. You wanted to end up there, but you know, I understand circumstances changed and the industry kind of changed as well. So,
for sure, indeed. You know, going on that, you were really a consistent qualifier at the World Finals. As we continue on with the World Finals talk, talk about just what it was like making passes down Thunder Alley, if you don't mind us asking.
No problem. I mean, it's hard to explain, really. I mean, your adrenaline's flowing. That's probably the fastest track you'd ever run, and to be able to come through Thunder Alley without hitting a wall. There were several guys that actually, you know, that hit the walls, hit the K-rails, knocked out some sprinklers and stuff like that. But we were fortunate enough to never do that. I did hit my obstacles there, but it was never down Thunder Alley. And, yeah, to go down and you're humming through about 80 miles an hour and slam on the brake, you turn it and come back. And, you know, if you were lucky enough to be the one on top, then that was great. And it didn't always turn out that way for me, but I mean, it was a thrill, man. I wouldn't change a thing with anything I did, I don't believe.
A lot of people know you're well known for all your paint schemes you have on your truck. And I believe, I want to say World Finals 7, I believe you debuted a new scheme. Let's talk about that. And just in general, all the paint schemes you've had, I'll actually bring a scheme up right now for you to talk about. What about this scheme?
That one was actually a full airbrush truck. I had a painter named Jesse Galvan, and he was phenomenal at the True Flame stuff. They got better from there. All the stuff that he had painted for us, it was just great. But we actually came up with that. It was just trying to make a difference. I liked the blue. I always did. And that was a chassis there that was a racehorse chassis. And I just wanted something different to stick out, you know, from one – you know, to debut that and bring that out. And that was kind of the reason on that one. But that paint scheme didn't stick around that long. I mean, we went through a ton of paint schemes, but that one I don't believe stuck around that long.
Levi, you got anything to add?
Sorry, I apologize. You know, the paint schemes were some of the King Crunch was some of the most iconic paint schemes, like just the craziest stuff you'd see. Personal favorite of mine is the carded one, and Vinny has a photo of that. And forgive me for the background noise, my cat is meowing. If Vinny's got a photo of the carded one, just what has been your favorite design of King Crunch over the years, David?
I have a couple. The card scheme was probably one of my all-time favorites. That actually debuted in 07, I believe. And that was probably my all-time favorite. The one that I really liked the most out of the other trucks was the blue with the, it was the Fiesta truck. It was we ran the canopy on it for a while, and Darren actually rolled that thing over and wiped out the canopy. So that paint scheme went away relatively quick, but he was running it in the, I think it was NRG Stadium and flopped it over. Actually, he didn't flop it. He hit it pretty good. He was running real hard and trying to win that race, but never came to fruition.
So I got to ask, how did Fiesta come about? I mean, you've had many Fiesta schemes over the years with your team, and you know, how did that sponsorship come about?
As weird as it is, the marketing director for Fiesta at the time, he was just driving down the road in front of the shop and saw the truck sitting there. And he came in and said, "Hey, what would it take to get our name on this truck?" And honestly, it came together really quickly, probably within a couple of weeks. We were able to put that down and come up with the first design and so forth. And they were real happy for years. They were big backers of ours for a long time, long time. I mean, the other one that comes to mind is the Easy Router. Those guys, all they stuck with us for a long time as well. And both of those companies right here out of Texas.
So what you were talking about, the Fiesta scheme earlier, could it be this one? This one was probably my favorite scheme over the years.
Yeah that one, we ran it as King Crunch too. That was actually one of our Darren ran it as El Matador, but that one's actually on the old chassis. That was the chassis that Scott built on that truck there.
Here's another picture.
Yeah, that was just a turn of our of the card scheme. We kind of stuck that out, changed up the card on the front office. It had Pepe, which Pepe was their bird, and just changed up the name on the side and so forth, but kept the rest of it. That was actually vinyl as well. We only did, I think, one of the card scheme that was in paint, and that was the one that debuted in Vegas in 07.
If you have any questions for David, make sure you ask him. But Levi, you got anything else to add?
I do. You know, David, you have a lot of special paint schemes, but also you've got some other trucks that you've ran, mainly speaking Nitro Fish and Nitro Hornet. How did that come about?
The Nitro Fish was actually kind of like a late night hours deal. I mean, we were running the MLNT series, and they were going to do Vegas. I couldn't do Vegas just out of respect for the company that we had run the World Finals with. I didn't want to go into Vegas running the King Crunch body. And with the MLMT, they had pretty deep connections. And I got tied in with Kenny Koretsky. And we showed up in Vegas. It was King Crunch. And by the next morning, it was Nitro. It was the Nitro Fish. I mean, they did the swap really quick. And that was a really cool truck. I like the first design. They changed the design up over the years, but the first one was the best one, I think.
I think we actually have a picture of it right here.
Yeah, that was the first one, definitely. That was a fun series too, that MLNT deal. I think we wound up second in that series, second to Dan Runty. Just never could. I was within just a few points of beating him that year, but he had his game on that last game or the last race, so he wound up walking away with that one.
Heard Levi mention Nitro Hornet, and here's Nitro Hornet right here.
Yep.
Any story behind that?
That one, I'm trying to think on that one. That one came from our sponsor, TX7. His son Ross was a photographer, and we wanted to come up with another name that we could run, and that one, I believe, I forgot what the races were that we came up with that for, but anyway, Ross was the one that came up with the name, and then we just kind of went kind of crazy with the artwork, and it changed a few times over the years, but mostly had that I don't think it changed up too much, but that was the off-road body on that one. I didn't like that scheme with that off-road body. It just never worked. But
and, you know, in my opinion, the most recognizable scheme you've had would have to be this one.
Yeah.
And what's the backstory behind this, and who designed this scheme?
That was actually a Hot Wheels design. That was the first design that they came up with. Well, I say the first. After many renditions of what do you want to run, this design here came about. And, I loved it from the start. Like I said, the first one we did in Vegas for 07 was full paint, full airbrush. Not a lick of sticker on it other than the Monster Jam stickers. But, that by far was my favorite.
Gotcha. And you know what? Let's talk a little bit about this scheme. This is a little throwback scheme you had.
Yep.
Levi, you want to say anything about that?
Yeah, I do. This was a scheme I saw in 2016 in Anaheim, and I was always kind of curious on the backstory of it. Obviously, I've heard the fan forums and theories and stuff. It was just a last minute deal possibly, or they just wanted to throw it back to a classic paint scheme of that truck, which is very honorable. What was the deal with that?
Yeah. I mean, it was a throwback. I had a lot of fans getting emails, Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff, that everybody wanted to see an old design that we had for King Crunch. I didn't want to take the design and just run with the old original. We put the star in there, trying to change it up a little bit, but for the most part, it was recognizable as the old King Crunch. Ran the old style body on it, you know, originally. That body, if that's the one that was in California, we had to, that was a rush job. I had rolled the truck over the week before, and they could not get it 80, I think it was 80, 81 body. They couldn't get it to us fast enough. So I bought that body from Gary Schott, and we put all the vinyl on in Rick Swanson's shop right before the, I believe it was Anaheim.
Pretty awesome fan comments. We got a comment from Alexander Parrish, and he says, my favorite King Crunch paint scheme, obviously besides the Texas on the Chevy and the trophy truck, was the black trophy truck with purple flames.
Yeah, that one was not my favorite. Hot Wheels came up with that one, and they wanted, that was I mean, it looked good on paper, but that was really about it for me. I never really liked that truck, the design. It didn't stay around very long. We changed it up pretty quick, but there were a lot of people that did like it. I just, unfortunately, it wasn't me. I wasn't one of them.
We have another comment from my good buddy Travis Palm, and he says, man, David has a lot of history when it comes to me and collecting Hot Wheels toys. This truck was the first one I got, and he signed it. I'm assuming that might have been in Minneapolis he's talking about. Sometime in Minneapolis, Travis, if you could list below when that was, that'd be great.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, that was a plus with that. When, you know, running the Monster Jam circuit, you had the Hot Wheels, and I still got a ton that my wife had collected. We had quite a few trucks that we, you know, have a little collection of, but signing them for fans is always a big deal. You always wonder whether they're going to take them and sell them, but if you did, you did. But most guys, you know, they, once we signed them, they hung on to them. I actually had a few fans that actually had a tattoo made, a true tattoo, and I signed one in El Paso, and I forgot the other one was up on the East Coast, which I was very surprised about.
So this next question in the comments is a pretty good one. Curious about this myself, and relates to Hot Wheels as well. And it's from Alexander Parrish, and he says, was Nitro Hornet ever going to be a 3D body just like the Hot Wheels truck?
Originally, yes, we had started it. We actually had the whole rear of the Hornet done in foam. Darren had spent hours and hours and hours cutting it and shaping it, but we could never come away with how we were going to do the front. And we kind of, unfortunately, we were so busy with the racing season, we didn't have enough time to mess with that, you know, that often. And it just kind of got stuck on the back burner. And one day we were doing something, and it's like, man, are we ever going to do that? Probably not. Well, let's go throw it in the dumpster. So we just threw the whole thing, of probably $1,000 worth of foam, but, you know, just took it and chunked it. So we kind of made our own path at that point.
I heard you mention Darren Basil. You know, I got to ask, how did the Basil brothers come about? You know, you got Darren driving El Matador. You know, where did you find him, and how did that lead to him getting behind the seat?
Well, I first met Darren in, oh man, it was up in Oregon. I can't remember the name of the little town we were doing. It was a show right after the World Finals, and he was up there. He was driving barefoot at the time, and it was an old turd of a truck. I mean, that truck was tore up. It was in bad shape, but he was working his tail off to keep it together and make it look good. And I got back to the shop at that point, and actually Nails still owned it at that point. And I got back to the shop, and I told Nails, I said, dude, I found our next driver. And it was kind of hit and miss. I mean, they were out in California. I was back in Texas. They were doing a show with Pablo out in Salinas, California. And I just happened to call out there, and I was talking to Pablo about something. And he goes, dude, that guy you wanted is here. So he stuck somebody on the phone that I thought was Darren, but it was actually Aaron. They were just trying to play a trick on me. And we finally got where we agreed upon him coming down, and I think that's actually the same time that Aaron decided that he was going to come down and work for Pablo. So we got two birds with one stone at that point.
Continuing on with Darren, what was the idea behind El Matador? I know that was your second truck for a long time. What came about it? Or was it your idea, Darren's idea, et cetera?
Yeah, that was actually, we wanted a second truck. We didn't want to run two King Crunches all the time. I had that. I ran it with Jeff Hoy. It worked great with Jeff running it, but we were trying to get both trucks in one trailer, and we wanted to go, you know, show to show that way. So we had a young lady at the office named Claudia, and she actually came up with the name. And then Jesse Galvan was the painter. The first one, again, was all paint. And Jesse was a painter, Spanish, and he knew exactly what that thing needed to look like. So we just left it up to Jesse to come up with that, with the candy apple red and then the true flames and all that stuff. The true flames, we tried to run between the both to give some, you know, to unify the trucks. But, yeah, that was a pretty neat process, and it was all just to get Darren a truck at that point.
I believe this was the first rendition of El Matador. I could be wrong. It's a picture of El Matador and your truck in the background. Yep. Assuming this is the scheme you're talking about.
Yeah.
Do you possibly know where this is?
I'm guessing. No, I don't. Is that Red Bluff?
Looks to be Red Bluff or some type of speedway. Not sure where it is.
Yeah, there's no telling. I mean, we did so many out there on the West Coast, man. They all kind of ran together at one point. But that is the design that I was talking about. And like you see, that we had the flames on both trucks just to unify the trucks. But you know, that old El Matador, that was the original Scott Stevens chassis that we ran for several years until we cut it up.
You know, talking about the West Coast and the West in general, you know, you're from Texas. So, you know, what are some of your favorite places to go on the West Coast or West in general? Indie shows to be particular, or just shows in general?
Well, Red Bluff by far was my favorite. We ran that one, man, almost since I started. And then my other, really the one that I liked a lot was Sublimity Harvest Festival in Oregon. We ran that one for several years, and then Darren and Aaron both being from there, it really made it, you know, a very good fit for us. Most of the time I'd get out there and I'd start running and I'd be really stinking, is what I feel was, you know, a bad show. And then I'd go back to Darren and I was like, dude, why don't you finish this weekend? You just drive it. And, you know, it would always turn out a lot better with him in the seat. He's running for his hometown crowd, and it's, you know, let him tear it up if he wants to.
You know, we've talked a lot about photos. We've talked a lot about paint schemes especially. But I have to know, David, and forgive me for backtracking on this. I should have asked this earlier. How did you feel, and what did it feel like to carry the King Crunch name for so long? Because, you know, I'm sure you've seen the old Scott Stevens races and even the Scott Stevens crashes. So how did it feel to get such a legendary name to be the full-time driver of it?
I mean, it was – obviously, I loved it. You know, I got started back right after Scott got back from Charlotte after he wrecked the truck. I helped him build on the tail end of building the new truck. And that's the one that Darren was in that El Matador picture. That was a truck that he built to replace it. I loved running it. Like I said, I wouldn't change anything. There was a lot of struggle in the first because it was truly known as a rollover truck. Scott was really prone to rolling the truck over. It took a lot to get out of that to where people didn't expect that I was going to go out and roll it over all the time. But it was still, you know, I still had a good time and cherished the time that I had with Scott whenever I was running with him. And whenever I took off and we started running on our own, it was a sky's the limit kind of a deal.
A question from Chris Coe, and he wants to know, any of the old school King Crunch trucks going to make a debut at the Hall of Fame?
Nothing from me. Now, if Dylan chooses to do it, that's on Dylan. But, you know, he has the entire team now doing great with it. I don't have any plans of my own to be putting anything out. That would be on Dylan at this point.
And we went over this question. We're going to go over another toy question. And this is from Travis Palm. And he says, any more plans for trucks from Spin Master? If so, any hints?
Again, that's a Dylan deal. He's sole operator of the Crunch, El Matador, Nitro Hornet. All that stuff is his now. As many of you probably know, some of you don't, I had a stroke in 2017. And Dylan purchased it in 18. Anything that to do with the current King Crunch, that's Dylan Finley. Like I said, he's doing a great job with it, and I expect him to do it for years to come.
Well, it's that time of the hour. It's time for Phil Vicinanza with Philosophy.
What's going on, guys? Another podcast, another great guest, and a whole lot more questions and stories to be told.
Nice.
All right, so David, I got to ask, you know, we've really had a great run of questions so far, but I want to go all the way back to your first event. Do you remember where it was and what was going through your head first time driving a truck?
Well, the first time in the truck was actually back with Scott, and that was in Beaumont, Texas. He was going to do the Saturday afternoon show, and he did autographs, the pit party, all that. He came back to the trailer. I was getting everything ready to go, getting all our tools in order, and he goes, you need to get in there and get in a driving suit. You're going to be driving today. I was, as everybody, I think, when they first get in a truck, I thought was the fastest and highest jump and all that stuff that you could do. But come to find out, I wasn't as good as I thought I might be. And Scott let me know, but I was able to, you know, grow from that. And that was the first time in the truck. The first time on my own, knowing I was going to run a full show was actually in the Astrodome, one of the last shows in the Astrodome. And we had gone out, and I still remember that to this day. I don't know. Most of y'all know, some of you don't. Bill Easterly was pretty high up at that time. I think it was still Clear Channel. It might have been the United States Hot Rod Association back then. But he came up to me and he goes, I just want you to know, if you suck, you'll never run for us again. And so I guess good for me, 2016 was pretty much my last year running. But I didn't suck, so they kept me, and I think I grew from that, you know, just from, I don't know if he meant it to be encouragement or not, but that's the way I took it.
And from working from guys like Bill firsthand, I can definitely say that was encouragement, and it showed on the track because you picked up a lot of wins on the Monster Jam level, including key victories in stadiums like Houston and San Antonio. Did you always keep track of the wins or realize that maybe some competitions had more prestige than others?
Yeah, I mean, you knew when races, you know, some races were bigger than other races and so forth. And when you had TV involved, you know, you wanted to run a little bit harder than what you normally might. But, it always kind of boiled down to the World Finals in March. And you would run hard all year long because you want to go to the World Finals. And that's the same thing that they're pushing to you. You got to run hard so you qualify for the World Finals. So we would run harder, you know, during the first of the year because of that. Summertime, I just do it just because I could, you know, at that point. I mean, Jimmy Creighton would ask me anytime we were running together, do you got your iPod? Because I was big about sticking an iPod on, sticking earplugs in, and running it till the end of a song. And most of the summertime guys, they really didn't care. They got a show. That's what they were wanting. And for me, it was just all about just going out and having a good time and, you know, busting up what you can, I guess.
So we've mentioned Scott Stevens a lot. Obviously, he was a big inspiration for you. But who were some of the other competitors or people in the business that gave you a helping hand or advice during those early years?
I mean, the one would have to be Pablo. He was, at you know, back in the days, I mean, he was more like a brother than he was a competitor or a teammate or anything like that. And we ran together even during the summertime. My truck was in his trailer. Yeah, Pablo was, I learned more from him, honestly. Unfortunately, I learned more from him than I did from Scott. I had more time with Pablo than what I did with Scott. And, yeah, I definitely cherish those times. Those are times you don't forget.
And time flies so much when you're having fun and competing with people that you respect, and it's all across all levels, whether, you know, the big events or the smaller fairgrounds and rodeo arenas. Did you notice any kind of, you know, do you have a different mindset comparing when you compete in a stadium versus when you're competing in a smaller venue?
I mean, honestly, I was always worried, to be honest. I was always worried that the truck would get, you know, something would happen with the truck. You're in a smaller venue and, you know, the wheel's going to fly off or something. I was always worried about that in a smaller place. But for once you start running and you get out there and your adrenaline gets flowing, it really all kind of all goes away. I mean, you just you're in the moment and you do the best show that you can at that time.
And from the small venues to the big stage at the Monster Jam World Finals, you've competed in so many of them. Do you have a favorite moment that stands out among the rest as your favorite from the World Finals?
No, probably. I mean, the World Finals just in general was just a blast. As muddy as it was, and don't even try to pinpoint me on a year. I know I had to run Medusa, super muddy. She had big cleats, but we still hung with her. And that was probably a big moment for us. I also like the one where we were running Candace Jolly, and we came from way far back. I took the corner way too deep, almost hit the wall with it, and still wound up taking the win because we had built a massive power plant that year, and it had a ton of gumption in it. So it helped us come away with that win.
So you've had the opportunity to compete with a handful of promoters that have really kind of thought outside the box of being a traditional monster truck event. And one of them is the Major League of Monster Trucks. That's where the Nitro Horn and the Nitro Fish reigned supreme in 2007, 2008. How did that come about where you got to run MLMT, and what was that experience like?
Well, MLMT was actually from the promoter out west, Joe Froome. It was his brainchild. Deborah Maselli was there. She had a pretty good hand in it. And then, you know, some other key figures were involved in that. But, I mean, they asked us if we would be willing to run a points-style championship race. And at that time in my career and my life, I was like, hell yeah, I want to run it. You know, we'll come with the best of what we got. And both Darren and I did extremely well in that series. And like I said, I mean, and I could be off on it, but I think Darren even got third. And so it was Dan was first, I was second, and Darren was third. And we kicked tail every weekend when we were running that thing. That was an awesome event.
Do you have any key memory or a good story from those days that stand out from MLMT?
Yeah, I guess I think it was in Tennessee, and the Hall brothers, they hadn't made any of the races at all, and they came to the Tennessee event and kicked everybody's butt. And I was sitting there, and I'll never forget. And I had a pretty good, like I said, I had a pretty good power under me for a Chevrolet. I think at that point I was probably running a 575, and we were humming along. I was running Mark, and I came around the final turn, and I didn't even see Mark. I never even saw him. And I was looking for him. You know, there, he was on the outside lane, so I could have seen him as I was approaching. Never saw him. I was like, dude, this is a shoe-in. I got this one. And I took the turn and hit the little roller, and then I hammered it to go over the final jump. And all I heard was a sound like a flock of bees. And just that dang Hemi was, he had that thing lit. And he passed me before we finished got to the finish line. But that was actually a pretty fun race. But unfortunately, I didn't come over the win on that one.
So another one of those unique promoters was Stadium Super Trucks. How'd that come about, and what was that experience like for you?
A disaster. I think it was Rich Schaefer had called us on that one, and we were going to do St. Louis. We go out there and do it. Darren actually won the racing. He went to do a donut, I think it was, to celebrate. He caught the dirt there, rolled it over, and it kind of slid into some bleachers. Didn't really mess him up that bad, but it did a little bit. And that didn't turn out too well for us in the end. It took a lot of money to pay for that.
So over the years, you've traveled with, you know, Darren Basil a ton. Do you have any good Darren Basil stories?
The one that always sticks with me, and I think I know what city it was in. I think it was in Cheyenne, Wyoming. When you have him on, he'll better be able to answer it for sure. But we were staying at a hotel, and I swear, I don't, like I said, you'll have to ask him about it more, but ask him about the time he saw the ghost in the hotel. That was by far the funniest that I can remember. That was just a quick little, you know, how would you sleep good last night or whatever it was, dude, there was a ghost. And he never let it down. I always hit him with that thing. Let's go stay in this hotel. I think that's where the ghost's at. And I didn't even remember, and I still don't. I think it was Cheyenne, but I'm not positive. And then we also did one in the Evergreen Speedway up in Washington. And I was running. Darren was running. I blew my motor up. Actually broke the snout of the crank out of it. And That was in Monroe, Washington. And we're going to go to Spokane was the next event the next weekend. So we loaded everything up as fast as we could. It was me, Darren, and at that time I had Jacob Smallwood. And we all hauled butt over to Spokane. I believe it was Spokane. We parked my rig, and then Rick parked his rig right beside us. He had the jib crane that he pulled his tires up in, and we used that to pull the motor out. Jacob had built a complete clean room inside the trailer. I mean, we wrapped it with plastic, cleaned the trailer head to toe, and we ripped that motor down to the bare block. And I ordered all the parts next day. The crank came in 2 days later, I think, because they had to get all the bob weights and stuff like that to get it balanced. And we shoved that motor back together Friday morning. Friday night's the show. Friday morning, we got it stabbed back in the had it stabbed back in the truck, fired the truck up, and went and won the whole weekend with it. And then that was probably the most memorable as far as hustle, you know, a ton of money. And, you know, the reward at the end was winning the racing.
Definitely a good memory for sure. And we got a comment from Ryan Lee Roberts, and he says, talk about the fire in Tallahassee, Florida, 07.
Oh, good God. That's way back. That one was a trainee fire. We were running the VR2. I bought a ton of VR2s from Tom Mintz, and they were, for lack of better words, turds. They just didn't hold up. We tried everything we could to keep them together. And that one, I blew the front pump seal out of it. I didn't even know. I knew I was on fire, but I didn't know the fire was as big as it was. Because Darren, when I got out of the truck, he goes, dude, I don't even know how you stayed in there. But yeah, that was a tranny fire. I caught fire one other time, was down in Houston at a Rundy Round course down here that we're running a show. And I blew the engine and transmission in the same at the same time. And the whole truck went up in a big fireball. And somewhere I have a photo where just the headlights of the truck is the only thing you saw. And then my silhouette in the from the flames behind you. But that's the only two times really that I've ever been on fire. That fire in Houston actually torched my driving suit. But luckily enough, we were sponsored by Awesome Racewear at the time, and they got me a new suit out real quick. But yeah, that one actually burnt the suit up pretty good.
Well, we have a question from one of our many monster truck dads out there, Lee Plato. He wants to know, where did the Chevy bodies come from? The one we tried to mount was junk, apparently. I don't know what body you tried to mount, though.
Yeah, I don't know either. Which one he's referring? Was it one of mine that were junk, or he just got like, is it an old Chevy or a new Chevy? I guess I'd have to know a little bit more about it than.
Yeah, Lee, if you could be a little more specific for us, we could answer your question, or if Vinny can pull that up, that'd be great to see. But transitioning from that, you know, talking about all this, right, your trucks were also part, or at least two of your trucks at the time, were also part of the very first Triple Threat series. And I don't know if you were specifically at any of the shows, but what was that experience like if you were at it?
I actually wasn't at that time. I was concentrating on stuff I had going on at the shop. Darren and Aaron were both running on that series. They took off and they did that thing on their own. I don't even remember how well they finished, to be honest, but yeah, that was a Darren and Aaron. They did that one without me on that stuff.
So do you have any funny road stories you can share with us?
Probably the one that always sticks in my head. I got a bunch of them, but they all involve the same person. Ron Nelson, Bustin' Loose years ago. We used to run a lot together. His shop was right down the road from our shop. And we were doing Minneapolis, Minnesota. Again, I had blown the motor up that weekend. So I was rushing to get back to Houston so I can get everything to engine guy. I had the engine dude on my telephone. I was talking to him. And the next thing I see is it was a brand new, back when the 386, I think it was, or 379, 386, I think it was a new Pete that was just out. And I was talking to my engine guy. And the next thing I see is a big black tire coming back. I was behind Ron, and I see a big black tire coming back in the median. And, then the tire whips across the highway and shoots right in front of this Pete, and then it keeps going. And I told my engineer, I said, dude, I'll call you back. So I hung up with him, and I got on the CB, and I was like, Ron, you lost the tire. So we pulled over. It was probably 2 miles from where the tire took off. There goes, we pulled over on the side of the road. Ron starts hiking. And he was gone for a while, but I mean, like I said, it had to be at least a mile and a half, probably 2 miles that tire was behind us. And then you look over, and we went over a hill, and I was looking back waiting on Ronald. And the next thing I see, here comes Ronald on the side of the highway, and he looked like a little kid that used to play kick the can, but he had a big semi tire, and he was just rolling that tire all the way back. And we got all the way back to the trailer. And he started putting it on, and we were so involved in that, we didn't notice that, and this was, like I said, I think it was Minneapolis still, we didn't notice the state trooper had pulled up behind us. And about that time, the guy, he goes, can I help you boys or do something like that? And as soon as Ron heard that, he like hunkered up over, because I mean, the tire wasn't any way, shape or form, it wasn't good to go on the road, but he got it all strapped on there. and we went to the next truck stop. He bought a tire, and we were off and running again. But I told him at that point that, dude, I got to go. I got to get back to the shop. We had a show the next week, and I had to get that engine out and to the engine, you know, to our engine guy, and then back in before the next weekend. So I took off and left him at the truck stop, unfortunately. But that was that always sticks with me. Just I still don't know how the heck he did it.
For sure. Speaking of, let's get back into the shop. Chassis, you've recently have built some of your own chassis, Smith Racing chassis, I believe they are called, but they have a little star emblem on the cradle. Some notable ones are Obsession, Obsessed, and obviously your King Crunch from 2016. What was kind of the inspiration for those chassis? Because Rick, from what Rick Swanson has told me, his Smith Racing chassis, it handles like a very nice boat. So just what was your inspiration for making those chassis?
I always felt that there's something, I mean, everybody does it. I mean, when you have a piece of equipment and you're running it every weekend, I had the Racehorse chassis I was running all the time. I was really happy with the Racehorse chassis, but I knew there was always something that I could do. And I went back and we just kind of designed it, not so much from the ground up. We took aspects. I mean, everybody, you take it off a Patrick chassis, that looks good on a Patrick. Maybe we'll try that. And, you know, some items off the Racehorse. The biggest thing is I swayed, you know, when we swayed in the main frame rails to get the shock clearance, I used to dent the frame all the time in the Racehorse because the shocks would hit the main frame rails. So I wanted to sway those in so we had more clearance. The biggest thing was honestly running a super short transfer case, getting that motor way down the bottom. Rick's are both, I think, 18-inch drop, if I'm not mistaken. His were low, but my crunch truck that I ran in 16, that one was like mega low. I mean, it was all about the low center of gravity, and we felt that it would handle better. It does. It turns better. There was a lot of aspects to it. And then changing up the tubing, trying to get the thing where it's a little bit stronger, but a little bit lighter. And we accomplished that. I mean, my truck and the 16 truck only weighed 8,900 pounds with the toter tires on. So we dropped quite a bit of weight off of what we used to run. So just all those little things together, you know, you're trying to play with it and make it work and different ideas. I think this will work better or whatever. And some of them did, some of them didn't. And you're changing up from there.
So you're talking about Rick Swanson and you're good friends with him and you've worked very close with him over the years. And at one point you guys kind of had an alliance going and you were looking to team up on a truck called Fast Pack, or, you know, what did that all entail? How'd that come about?
We had a sponsor that wanted to go nationwide, and is similar to his Linex deal, but this deal was a little bit larger, I think, than the Linex. It would have been a lot more money, and so we were trying to gather up the best we could of people. I had people in Florida, all the way out to the West Coast, and we were going to run different trucks or the same truck on different chassis throughout, just to get that sponsor the coverage that they were wanting. Unfortunately, it kind of fell through. At that time, it was, you know, Clear Channel. They grabbed a sponsor, and they could offer them a lot more than what we could. We were only going to give them, you know, I think we had four trucks that could have run the truck, run the name, and you know, they're able to offer them a lot more. So we lost that deal.
So flashback to earlier when Lee Plato asked his question. He now says, no, we tried an 80s Chevy body on our full size, and it was garbage. David, where do you get your bodies from? I think that's what he's asking.
I got you. Okay. So when we were doing the 80s body, we're the same guys, and I can't remember the name of the company right now, but they're out of Florida. They're right down the road from Feld Motorsports. They did a lot of bodies for Feld at the time. And they actually built the 80s trucks as well. They had a bunch of them down there. They had some F-150s and stuff like that they were doing. I think it was an old Medusa body. But that's, if I think of the name during this, I'll let you know. But they're out of Florida. It's actually the same company that that Shane England used on his 65.
So speaking about bodies, Levi, I think you know some bodies that David has ran.
For sure, David. Going back to some of the unique bodies you've ran, as Lee kind of brought us back to the bodies conversation here, your truck is, not a lot of people I don't think know this, but one of your trucks, at least the one Darren drove, is credited in the Nitro Circus movie as Thrillbillies. And then you had a couple, I believe it was just one, but I could be wrong if it was both. You had a couple trucks with the Family Guy body on it. How did the Family Guy thing come about? And also, how did the Nitro Circus movie deal come about?
So the Nitro Circus deal was through Cam McQueen. And they basically rented the truck from us. Cam actually drove it. And he demolished the truck, the body, everything. I don't know if they were even filming at the time. I think he was just doing a practice jump, and they had built the jump incorrectly. And they were right at the base of the jump, there was a dip, and the chassis unloaded. And by the time he hit the top of the ramp, he just went end for end, and it wiped the truck out pretty good. Darren had a rough time. They were in Salt Lake City, and he had a buddy of ours that lives there, Mark Gallagher. He had him go or come over, and they all worked and got it going again. But yeah, it was that was just because of a Cam deal. I mean, I always liked Cam, and we got along good. And it was just something you could do for the money more than anything. The Family Guy was again through the MLMT running. I think that was Myrtle Beach was where that body ran, and we only ran that one event. It was for that city. They were doing something to promote the Family Guy, and they wanted a body, so we got chosen to do that.
Well, the bodies that were on your trucks were NEA and Monster Mutt Rottweiler. Your team was part of the inaugural, what's now known as the Triple Threat Series for Monster Jam. You had the Basil Brothers in those trucks. Where did that all kind of piece together, and what was that experience, you know, being part of something that's now across three tours, but really experimental that first year?
Yeah, I mean, Feld had been taking a turn towards younger drivers, more so than us old turds that were out there. And that's really kind of how that all started. You know, I had both the boys were working, and we got approached by Feld and said, hey, we want to put them on the Triple Threat. Can we run this body and this body? And they, you know, of course you're going to do it, you know, just keep your running. And during the first quarter, you try to stay busy. So yeah, they sent the bodies and all that stuff. The only plus to that deal was that if they rolled it over, then, you know, the bodies were taken care of, but all the hard parts were still ours. And that series goes through a ton of hard parts. But as they went along, they were getting better at not breaking. It just took some getting used to on that series to trying to figure out how to work the truck more so than, I mean, both of them were used to running stadiums. So you go from stadiums all the time to running in, you know, small arenas. You got to change the way you drive it. And it took them a little while to get adjusted to that.
So knowing what you know now, would you be a part of that trial run and participate in the Triple Threat Series again?
I probably would, just because at that point, at that time, I mean, most, you know, whether you believe it or not, those two boys that were working for me were more like sons than anything. And I would have done anything to make, you know, to make their life easier if I could. So because they love to run, I was getting older. I know that. And if I didn't run, it wasn't as big a deal. Actually, I wanted to spend more time at home with my daughters. I'd race their entire life for the most part. And I missed a lot of growing up. So I got to at least see the end of, you know, the girls going to school and so forth like that. As I grew up, I missed the younger years, but I was still here for the later part. And so, yeah, I probably would. Just only thing you would probably look at is just, you know, a different way to run it than what we started off as. We went through a ton, like I said, there was a ton of parts at first, but I mean, I don't put that on anybody. You're going to break stuff in monster trucks. If you think you can get a monster truck and not break stuff, you're dreaming it. You're going to break it. It's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of how many times and when it's going to happen.
But you got the call back in the driver's seat. And this is a question from my buddy, Brian Anger. In 2016, you were part of what we kind of call the Inside the TV Tour, the FS1 Championship Series, but it was just you. It was just King Crunch. You didn't have a teammate truck with you. What was that tour like? And, you know, just being there, one truck, just yourself on TV every single week.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, probably the time of my life. I mean, I was teamed up in Adam Anderson's trailer. So we got to hang out a lot with Adam and his crew. I had Mike Wine with me, an old friend that, you know, the kind you go to war with. And if you're going to have something, and that was a brand new piece at the time, we really had a lot. We went out on a limb trying the new shocks, those, you know, the bigger shocks. It didn't work out. They stunk. I think Dylan, actually, once Dylan got the truck, he got rid of those shocks, which probably rightfully so. But Mike was able to keep that thing together every week. And, I mean, just I could not have done it without him, for sure. And I don't know that I would have wanted to. I mean, to be able to hang out with an old friend, and, you know, we did a little bit of traveling, but we did also a lot of flying. And just to be able to have Mike on my corner was probably, like I said, probably a highlight. Definitely.
It's a highlight for sure. Do you have any, you know, key funny moments with Mike Wine? I know he's kind of a folklore on all the different podcasts. You know, any funny Mike Wine stories?
There's a lot of funny Mike Wine stories. There's not a whole lot of funny Mike Wine stories that can be told on a podcast, but Mike is the most genuine, I mean, kind-hearted. He'll do anything for you, and he bends over backwards to make sure that whatever you need is done. I love that dude to death. And if I ever started another truck again, Mike Wine, I would hope, would be in my corner.
You know, you and Mike Wine went full pretty much across the country in 2016. Speaking about going across country and all these places, what has been your favorite state or just favorite places to perform in general?
As weird as it is, it's out of this country, and that would have been Canada. We only went up there twice. The first time Darren and I went up to into Canada, we went up through New York and did not have a good time coming back. And I swore at that time when we got out of the truck at a truck stop on the U.S. side, I knelt down and I kissed the ground and I told Darren we will never go back to Canada. And I lied because we did. We teamed up with Travis and Tyler and we went up through Idaho. And honestly, that was probably the coolest trip I had ever been on because those two kids, Travis and Tyler, they knew the whole area. And there were so many cool little towns. And we were able to just do stuff that I would not have been able to do. And it's all because of, you know, to Travis and Tyler. That was probably one of the coolest. The other side of our country, though, I would actually say that Maryland is probably the most beautiful state that we have in our country. And if you ever have the chance to run up and drive that, I think you would agree. I mean, it's that's probably the nicest stuff that I've done. I mean, don't get me wrong, Idaho, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, all that stuff, Washington, over on the upper west side. That's all beautiful stuff as well. You're running right along the side of a river. You're driving down the highway and there's elk swimming through the river. I mean, it's just, there's neat factors there as well. But I honestly couldn't just pick and say that this is my all-time favorite, but I know that Canada holds a lot. It holds up there pretty tight.
Hey, so when you've been up into Canada, have you ever been to Grand Prairie?
No. When we went in, and we went out. The first one was, I think, Calgary, Alberta. We stayed right there at the hotels connected to the dome. We went in at 2 a.m. We crossed into Canada, and that was where our mess up was, because we didn't get everything checked on the U.S. side before we went in. And we went in at 2 a.m, did the show the next day, and we weren't even in that country for 24 hours. It was probably 1 a.m. is when we were back at the border, and that's when we had all the hassle. So, we didn't stay there that long at all. The other side, we did go through a bunch of little towns. I couldn't tell you what the towns were. Travis and Tyler probably know exactly what it was that we went to. But we hit a couple of little towns once for lunch. It was had to be amazing for this little town. You're driving through two big 80-foot-long semis coming through your town that probably a population of 50. And you got these two massive 18-wheelers coming through to park and eat at one of your little cafes. And then we hit a little river on the way out, but we didn't go a whole lot. Tried to stay on task as much as possible.
Got Mark Gallagher in the comments, and he says, how about them Rocky Mountain Raceway days?
Yeah, Mark Gallagher, he's my buddy, man. He had a truck a few years back, and wound up getting rid of it. I think he bought it from Paul Winkleman and did a lot of work to it, and he wound up selling it. I don't know if it was to make him happy or his wife happy or make them both happy, but he got rid of them. But Marcus, he was our go-to guy at RMR. He would come and hang out with us. He would get right in there and fix anything that was broken. He's a mechanic by trade, and it's good times with Mark and his whole family, actually.
Well, it's that time of the hour. It's time for our next segment. It's time for Explain That Photo. We've already explained some photos earlier tonight, but we have some more, and these ones are a little bit more interesting. Alrighty, I got some more photos here, and the first photo is going to be this one. David, explain this photo.
Okay, so I'm guessing that's probably at NRG. That's on my new chassis, so that wouldn't be NRG then. That had to be somewhere else, because I tore that body up before there, and I tore that body up in Florida.
Looks like a 2016 track for sure.
Yeah, that's definitely the new chassis. Those hunk of crap shocks on there. So, I'm guessing that's probably in Florida. That's probably like down in Tampa or something like that. It wouldn't be Orlando. Could be at Buccaneer Stadium.
I want to say Atlanta, but I could be wrong.
No, it could be too. I mean, they all run together, man.
All right, Phil, you got a photo for us?
I do, but I just have a follow-up question with the picture we were just describing on screen. That 2016 season, you ran two different bodies. Why was that?
Because this body got torn up. actually, I gave the piece of a body or gave the whole side of the truck away while we were down there just so we didn't have to load it up. And had a fan that was down there that always wanted a body piece, so I gave him an entire side. And, so we went from there, and I think he came back to the shop. I believe that Mike would have come back, and he might have done it right there in Florida. But we ran the other body in Houston the next week.
All right, bring me up my picture.
Race Source.
There's you on the top right.
Yeah. That's old school. I don't even know where you got that from. But, yeah, that's actually, we had run that truck for a little while. It looks like Shock's already had all the powder coat off of them. So that one's been around for a little while.
Levi, you got a picture for us?
I do, if you'd like to pull it up, please.
I believe this one your dad took.
That is right. My dad took this photo. Can you explain, David?
Yeah, sure. Where's it at?
I believe this is Lake Paris.
Oh, okay. So that was a Borba show. Yeah, that we did that one. Rick, I guess Rick's there. I can't see that. I see Kelvin's stuff. Both of his.
NATO. I think Rod Wood was also there. Vinny, yeah. I think you have another photo from the show if you have it.
Yeah, I think Rick actually wound up filming a television show there that same weekend. I believe, anyway.
I believe you're right. I'd like to explain this photo to the crowd, and if John Borb was watching, I'd like to apologize to him. Me and my dad went to the show, and if you've been to the Speedway, you know the only way to get in is from turn number two.
Yep. At least.
And so we walked around the fair, and we saw turn two gate was open, no security guards. So me and my dad, and I was probably 11 at the time, 12, we just walked right in and started just taking photos.
There you go. I'm sure John wouldn't care.
We got away.
Nobody get hurt. That's the main thing. That's the main thing.
Nobody got hurt, thank goodness. Just waiting for we have more photos from you at the show. If
actually, we have a photo from Phil.
Uh-oh.
We'll bring more photos up from that show right after. Phil, you want to bring up that picture?
Show me the picture.
Oh boy.
That's a picture of me and you, David.
I'll say so. That's a little bitty guy there.
That was actually from my first ever show.
I was talking about me being a little bitty
guy. Oh, my gosh.
that's crazy.
Phoenix 2007. You're probably the first driver I've met at my first ever show.
So where was this show?
Bank One Ballpark.
Okay. Because yeah, I guess so, because that body was probably retired shortly after that, because that's right when we went to the card scheme is after this. And I could see the nose of that truck's pretty messed up. So,
yeah, good times.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Hey Levi, you want to bring up another picture from the show you were talking about?
Yeah, if you've got it. There you go. Do you remember much from this show weekend, like how the jumps were or just how it went in general?
I believe it was a J-turn course, wasn't it? Or a Chicago style? Turned out in that Libby front straightaway. I knew it was super tight, but you had this big jump on this one end. That was from the one end, and then there was another one on the other end. Wasn't quite as bad, though.
Right, and yeah, these are Vinny's.
Looks like these are taken from the infield, amazingly enough.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, we snuck in.
Well, once you got in, you did not get out.
We made sure to stay in the best we could.
That one was fun, too, because there was a fair there, and we all went out to the end of the fair after the show.
Yeah, the good old SoCal Fair. Vinny, do you have another photo from that you'd like to pull up?
Yes, I do. Explain this photo.
Yeah, that one's that's in Houston. I know that for a fact. That one I was – Adam – I had Adam helping me a bunch. And so I had Adam on the radio with me while I was running, and he told me to hit this one. And he goes, hit it with a bunch of steam. So I went in there and hit this one ramp. The bad thing is that I didn't have enough steam of probably what I should have, and I just nose planted right into another hill. And it flipped the truck backwards. It wouldn't have been that bad of a rollover, but the guys in the track crew, they drugged that truck off the hill, down around the side. They demolished the body on it, trying to get it off so they can keep the show going. But yeah, that's definitely in Houston.
So we talked about your TV days earlier, and you know this. This next picture is going to be our final picture for the night for Explain That Photo. And this one I personally want to know. This was in Glendale 2009. It was during that episode. Explain this photo.
Yeah, so that one, we blew the planetary up more than likely. And that's even back whenever Darren had the other new chassis. We both had racehorse chassis at that time, because that's a racehorse as well, because it has the blue shocks on it. So I was probably trying to get it going even while the show was going on. And Darren would run back and help me when he could, when he wasn't racing. So that's probably a blown planetary for sure. But the bodies came from U.S. bodies, U.S. body source, if Lee's still listening. Thanks, Denver.
Yes, thank you, Denver Ecton Camp, in the comments. Hey, you've had a lot of different guys part of your team crewing over the years. One of those notables was Shane England. How did you find Shane, and how did he just continue to grow with your team?
Shane found us. He's from Texas, and he's always had the desire to run a monster truck. Is just talking to him, you know, through that source. He actually came out and he was going to do the world finals with us. We took his truck out there, took a bunch of parts in a trailer that he had, and we took off and went to Vegas. Shane runs his tail off, and I know he's going to do it again. He got a pretty bad deal on the chassis that he had, and I think he had another one built now. So I'm not going to spoil any stuff for him. I know he's going to want to debut that, but Shane's a hell of a dude, and I do feel bad about all the stuff that that happened with his over the past season on why he had a dump out.
So do you have any advice for any fan looking to get in the industry, get their foot in the door?
I'm sure everybody you ask says the same thing. Don't do it. But honestly, you got to keep in mind your family as much as possible. I did keep that in mind, and was not able to spend as much time as I would have liked to, obviously at home. But monster trucks were everything at the time, so I ran it and ran it and ran it as much as I could. So, but with that being said, you will have the time of your life. There's no doubt. I would get you some very serious backers to make it all happen and be able to keep the truck together. That's a necessity. You got to have a big, a big deep pocketbook, and just enjoy it while you got it, man. I mean, that's my deal. I mean, Dylan has a team now, and but I would not trade anything for the time that I had.
The time you had, you spent it very well. You've covered the country all over. You've gone international. We talked about north of the border in Canada, but I know you've gone south of the border in Mexico. What were those experiences like competing in Mexico?
Dirty. It's once you get there, the people. I mean, and it's always about the fans, and the fans in Mexico are the most diehard fans, extremely, extremely proud, and they very appreciative of everything you do. And you don't find that as much in the States as what you do down in Mexico. We did get the chance to run up quite a few in Mexico. I mean, probably not as much as what we could have, but I mean, we went all the way down to Mexico City. We did Monterrey. I mean, we kind of hit spots all around the country, but it's super cool. The roads are hard to travel, there's no doubt. but it's still, it was a fun time. We did a lot of fun stuff going down the highway because there's not near as many rules over there as there are over here. At least we didn't think there was. So, I mean, passing food back and forth, going 80 miles an hour down the freeway from semi to semi because my motorhome was the only one that had a kitchen in it. So we passed some popcorn back and forth. I mean, all sorts of stuff. So it's but yeah, I mean, Mexico was fun. There's no doubt.
So for those of our viewers that are watching on our Facebook feed or later on YouTube, in your background there, I noticed there's a couple helmets. Why don't you talk about those?
I've just kept them up. The one on, which is this one over here, that was the first one that I ever had done. It was a friend of Scott's, and he painted that helmet up for me. And then the one over here, that one was painted up by Jesse Galvan. It was supposed to be brains, but it wound up looking like intestines. So we didn't run that helmet very long because I kept getting people asking, why do you got intestines in your head? So, and I gave them an answer that I won't give here, but, yeah, that's the, just two painted helmets that I have. The one over here, that one's only a half helmet. My father, I actually cut that helmet in half and I put it inside a shadow box for my dad. So I gave that to him quite a few years back and that's just the mate to it. But this one here actually could still go race, but I just don't need intestines in my head anymore.
For sure. Those are some awesome looking helmets, even if they have intestines on them. So when you use those helmets, when you're driving the truck, what was your favorite type of race course or freestyle course to drive on, you know, big or small, long or short, you know, you name it. What was your favorite course to drive on?
I mean, as weird as it is, old school stuff and the old school and the drag racing side of it, I like straight line drags. And if it had one bump, two bumps, or three bumps, didn't matter to me. I like finishing and hammering it and never lifting to the finish line. So the straight line drag was probably my favorite. J courses, I like those just as well. Chicago course, I mean, they were all right. I used to try and get the promoters during the summer to change the rotation because I am left-handed, so I turned better going to the left. Or actually to the right, I turned better to the right, but nobody, I only had one guy ever did it. Nobody else would want to switch up Chicago style up that much, but yeah. So, I mean, straight line drag is probably my favorite. I like the bigger stuff in freestyle. I like long ramps that you can launch it out there. The new stuff that they're doing today with a real short, abrupt, you know, straight up and down type of ramps that really didn't fit my driving style as much. You just had to adapt and kind of learn from that, you know? But yeah, to answer, I would be straight line drags and then anything in freestyle. I just like big jumps.
What's the biggest thing that you miss from monster trucks?
Probably the team, my team. I think that, you know, there was a long time with Darren. You know, you figure I had Darren was with me from the time that I started until I was done. So, I mean, you know, 16, 17 years, actually probably longer than that, we're probably together 18 years because he ran with me before I even purchased it. So, yeah, probably the team more than anything. And then, you know, the fun part about being able to being the owner of the stuff at the time was being able to watch how Darren had progressed. I mean, from when he first started driving with me till the end was a completely different driver. And to be able to watch him and his brother run at the same show or running each other, in my two trucks. That was always cool too. So, but yeah, I think it all kind of revolves around the team.
What's been your favorite memory in monster trucks? You've seen and done so many different things. Is there a favorite moment that stands out?
See, if you give me these questions ahead of time, then I can I'd be able to answer it better. I mean, honestly, it was probably double down in Houston, I guess. You know, hometown, able to win freestyle and, you know, pulling off a double down trophy. That was cool for sure. You know, especially with back then, I would have 300, 400, 500 fans that we bought tickets for that were in the stands. So, you know, to be able to watch or know that we did that for, you know, those people. As well as the Fiesta, even when Fiesta wasn't on the truck, they still supported us. So, yeah, I would probably thank Houston and just running in Houston in general. We did fair there most of the time. We had our shares up and downs for sure, but that'd probably be the best. The other thing that was probably a highlight, which most people won't think of being a highlight. When we first started this, when I first started driving, we still ran tandem freestyles. We still ran two trucks at a time. They got away from that pretty quick after that. But one time they got away with it was me and Mark McDonald. We were, I think it was McAllen, Texas. And we pulled, we both did donuts at the same time. We got a reaming for that, for doing that. We pulled it off. It looked cool. Nothing happened, but yeah, we got ripped for both of us running at the same time. But that was another cool moment. And Mark's a hell of a dude.
I actually have a picture of that moment right here.
Yep, that's it. Yeah, I probably got a little bit closer than he did, but I think I was already sitting in pretty. I drifted. My truck drifted a lot, but that was a racehorse chassis, and I would. That it would kind of walk a little bit, but yeah, still that was a fun time. We definitely, the next weekend we went to, I think it was Austin, and we both got pulled aside before the event and said, do not do that again. So that was the one and only time we got to do that.
Do you have any regrets from being in the business? Anything that stands out that you wish you could have had a second chance at or did or didn't do?
Nothing that really comes to the top of my head. Like I said, after I got out and was still building the trucks, the deal that happened with Shane, I regret that. There's no doubt. I thought of Shane and still do think of Shane as a friend. And I wish that wouldn't have happened. But from being in the industry, I can't really say that I would have done anything differently. We ran as hard as we could all the time when we could, and we fixed it when it was broken. But there's nothing that I could think of off the top of my head. I mean, somebody could probably come up with something, I'm sure. But right now, off the top of my head, nothing I could think of.
No, but you've lived it to the fullest. You've taken every opportunity and you've ran with it. That's how you built your name and your reputation. You know, David, this has been a great conversation, and we'll make this our last question here tonight. I ask this to, I think, every single guest we've had so far. When it's all said and done and you've accomplished so much and you're still active in certain ways in the business, but when it's all said and done, what do you want your legacy to be?
Probably that I gave it everything when I was in it. I gave it everything I had, and I tried to treat everybody like I wanted to be treated. I mean, granted, there were times that issues are going to come up, and that's going to be with anybody. But I truly cherish the friends that I built, the true friends that I built. in the years of racing and would not trade that for anything.
And, you know, the accolades speak for themselves. You are a multiple-time World Finals competitor, multiple-time stadium winner in Monster Jam. You've kept the King Crunch name alive and well over the years, and that's just a testament to the character you are and the reputation that you've left past, present, and I'm sure for the future. Isn't that right, Levi?
For sure. I can definitely recall memories from my first Monster Jam show, San Bernardino 2003 five truck show. David Smith and King Crunch was on that lineup. It was the old Texas body. I remember this really well. And, you know, every time I get a chance to see you out in California, whether it was Anaheim, Lake Paris, whatever show you were at, I'd always make sure to be there and get in your line to get an autograph. It was definitely an honor watching you compete for sure.
Awesome. I appreciate that. And I mean, the Texas flag was probably the early favorite of bodies that I had. And that really came about, the change came about to the carb scheme because we were told that if we wanted to be big outside of Texas, then we're going to have to get rid of the flag. And that was a hard thing to get rid of. And like I said, that's when the paint scheme change came around with the cards. But I still think that truck would have been popular if it would stay with the flag from then on. It wouldn't have mattered. But it's that once you said that, that kind of brought that up. That I remember that that's the reason why we changed that thing is because Hot Wheels said that we needed to.
What say you, Vinny?
Well, I mean, I grew up watching you, David, watching you on Speed Channel. Got to beat you at Glendale 2009. That show was the first Glendale show. And awesome podcast. Got all my questions answered. And I think Levi and Phil can say the same thing. It was great having you.
Well, I appreciate y'all having me on. And, I mean, hopefully you continue to do well. You guys are doing good so far. And just keep up the good work. Keep up the good interviews.
We certainly will, David. And who knows, you ever want to come back on again or we ever have you back on, give us a shout.
You need to get something together and get the old school guys together. You need to get Mike Wine and Rick, and there's a few guys you would – I think you're going to have to be fast on a mute button because there would be a lot of stories you probably couldn't tell a bunch of the whole thing. But
I'm sure we can work on something. It sounded like – Rick Swanson from our past episode had the same idea.
Who knows?
We like it whenever we can get. I still talk to Rick pretty much once a week at least, and we like sitting there chewing up old times and talking about old times and stuff like that. So I think it'd be a good show if you did that.
Sounds like another sit down, possibly.
I'm sure we'll get there. So, David, until next time, it's been a great honor having you out here on our podcast, and we hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, guys.
That is another podcast in the books. That was David Smith, King Crunch. You know, King Crunch is such a legendary name from Scott Stevens, and for David to take that name and to continue on with it throughout the 2000s and the 2010s, that's a big task. And I think some could argue that if he kept the name not only at the same level as Scott, but he even grew it to higher expectations where it competed at World Finals and consistently was on TV and was consistently a toy. We kept talking about toys here tonight because the King Crunch name was always on toy shelves. It still is on the toy shelves today. And, you know, now Dylan Fenley is running the team and keeping that name alive. It's also, you know, it's keeping Scott's legacy intact, but also the legacy that David has left.
For sure, and totally agree with what you just said there, Phil. David was just always a staple no matter what show. Like, if you had a decent lineup, it could be anywhere in the middle of nowhere to, you know, the big city lights of, let's say, Anaheim, California. King Crunch was always a truck that would stick out, and you would always say, I want to meet that guy.
You talk about sticking out. I keep saying Speed Channel, but, you know, this was the era I grew up in was – you know, watching Speed Channel 2009, 2008, 2010 era, 2007. And always just David's trucks always were, you know, one of the trucks that were the best running in the lineup, always placed well. And I mean, it was just awesome watching him perform in those days.
And as we say here, the show must go on, and that's exactly what we're going to do here on the Monster Truck Outlaws of the West podcast. If you enjoyed this episode here tonight, make sure you like and follow our Facebook page, and you subscribe to our YouTube channel where you can rewatch the past episodes. You can also watch those past episodes on our Facebook page. Just check out the video tabs. We have a lot of great podcasts we did in the past. Guys like Rick Swanson and Rod Wood to the rising stars like Wally Turner and Juan Munoz. They're all in the video tab. And also, our podcast feed. Wherever you can find podcasts, you can find us. Just search for Monster Truck Outlaws of the West. This podcast you're listening to, if you're not on the podcast feed, it'll be on the podcast feed after we're done here on Facebook.
All over.
All of our past episodes, all on our podcast feed. Hey, we're going to keep going here. We're not slowing down. Make sure you stay tuned to our Facebook page at the beginning of next week, where we will be announcing who will be joining us next Friday live here on the podcast. One thing's for sure, our guest next week is going to be crazy.
You won't want to miss it.
Tune in and check us out on Facebook to find out who will be joining us.
And turn notifications on, because it's about to get